Welcome back. The program is Force and Feeling. My name is Julie Motz. I'm your host. It's a program about emotions, about the emotional life of the body and the emotional life of the universe. We're very fortunate in having as our guest today Dr. Martha Eddy, who is a somatic movement specialist. And we've just been talking about her work with scoliosis and of going back to a period in utero when the bones of the spine were developing and perhaps not all the tissues were fully supported energetically in that development.
I also thank you for having me here. I'm thinking of another young child that I'm a little concerned about. His mother had me come in because he's 10 months old, and often when you think quintessential sitting of a 10-month-old, it's that very, very erect spine where you see the head kind of peeking out like a turtle coming out of his shell. This little young person is slumped, and he's sitting on the back of his sit bones, not forward on his sit bones. And so if he were a 9-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 40-year-old, he would look like a typical American. But for a baby, it is really disconcerting. And so she asked me to come and work with him. And it did occur to me that this kind of laxity in his spine, this low tone through his spine, could also be a precursor to scoliosis. So it's something, again, longitudinally that I think we should all be looking out for. And in his case, I did palpate and give him more of a sense of what we call a push pattern. It's a thrust from one bony area through to another. So an early in utero birth process, not early in utero, at the very end of the in utero period, just as we're sort of bulging into the uterine wall and wanting to get out, we've learned at that point to press from the hip bone, from the tailbone in particular, towards the head, and then to push back from the head towards the tail. And that rocking action that you sometimes see a child doing just kind of in bed, in child's pose in yoga, rocking forward on the head, rocking back towards the heels, is preparatory for birth. And it's also just this incredibly wonderful sensation of establishing a sense of self through compression from the core of the body, the pelvis, up through the head, which is then going to lead us sensorily from the eyes and the ears and the nose and the mouth through that vaginal canal, or as will happen many times these days, through a cesarean opening, into the world. And so having that really strong compressional sense reestablished even post-utero with a young child can be helpful in gaining more sense of how to align my body. So I did that with this little 10-month-old, just giving him a sense of pressure from his sit bones up to his head, from his spinal column through to each of the vertebrae above it. And very interesting to me is that I have to use that same technique over and over again with children through their feet to give them a sense of their power and their connection to the earth, which is a shift of subject, so I'll pause for a second just to see how that all fits.
Well, I was just thinking when you said through their feet, would that be particularly true of children who are born cesarean and didn't get to push against the uterine wall to come out?
Absolutely, or with children that are breech birth that come out feet first. Absolutely, really, really important. And to me, I guess I was surprised because I work with many children on the autistic spectrum, and so we expect that there's this, quote, lack of grounding, the tiptoe walking with them. But I was beginning to see almost every child that I was working with, kids with dyslexia, kids with attentional problems, kids with cerebral palsy, almost everybody has this really, really tight Achilles tendon. The gastrocnemius is just really tight. And I know in some of the other systems like Brain Gym, they work a lot with releasing the calf as a way to just establish more grounding and being on the earth. So the metaphor is certainly very strong. What helps to connect us in, whether it's to the original uterine environment and the gravitational relationship to mother and then to earth, and then how does that translate into the early infant world where we want to reestablish our feet connecting us to our to the earth and then to our bodies. And when I say to our bodies, I mean our feet connecting through kind of like a jump-like movement into the center of the body. So they're not just dangling, but they're active propellers.
Well, it does make sense that if that time of making that initial movement from low gravity to full gravity, you know, which you actually do with your feet, mm-hmm. if something goes awry there and you're not able to do that in a completely functional way, that there would be this withdrawing of awareness from the feet. You, mm-hmm. it's like you don't fully inhabit your feet because they weren't allowed to do what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it would be very difficult to ground, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what I hear you describing, another way to picture that is just that the neural tissue isn't as excited. So it's not activated. And therefore, well, I got through that major milestone without using my feet. There's a lot of other things I can do without using my feet.
But also, I'd imagine that coming back, if you were to re-inhabit your feet, you might feel all the frustration of that early experience, which might be quite frightening, of either pushing and pushing and not getting anywhere, or being yanked out through cesarean and not getting to push at all.
That's right. That's right. And there may also be the frustration, the coming into, oh, I'm too weak. And again, that may have earlier embryonic components, just that my body hasn't ever really fully developed through that area, so I don't have power. So the frustration you described could be just, how do I get that power?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you how your work has developed and changed through the years, and what to you are the most exciting insights or changes or transformations in the way you work that have come along?
Well, for me, I've been kind of wearing multiple hats, in that I went on to get a degree in exercise physiology just because I wanted to ground this work in sciences and movement science.
And what is exercise physiology?
It actually, from Columbia, the degree is called Applied Physiology, and it's understanding the physiological systems of the body and how they relate to movement, to exercising, to moving. So the traditional application of the work is either in sports medicine, so helping top-notch athletes be even more in shape, or in cardiac rehab, helping people with, such as you know intimately, heart transplants and heart issues to just reinvigorate their whole cardiovascular system. I hadn't realized that it was fairly much limited to those two domains of work, although now, of course, and through the 80s as I was studying, fitness knowledge is permeating the entire culture, and that's great. So the exercise physiology information has become very important just for everybody to understand healthy lifestyle. So it's served me very well in just really being able to help coach people in how they're using movement in their daily lives. As part of a kind of homework session of a somatic movement therapy session with me, I'm able to discuss with them, and it's work that I've developed in my own training program. I call it Dynamic Movement, Dynamic Health. As we talk through what their motivation is for activity, what they might do for themselves during the week to feel good, feel connected with nature, feel connected with their own bodily power, what types of exercise are going to align with the types of physical needs they have based on whatever ailments they might also have or other motivational foci. So I've used that work, and I've used it in another way, which is that about 7 years ago, a woman with stage 3 breast cancer came to me and said, via another friend, that we'd like to make a DVD for women with breast cancer to come through the post-surgical period with some kind of sensitized exercise program.
What a great idea.
And so we've done it, and it's been really exciting. I call it Moving On Aerobics. It's named after the fact that the center that I run in Oakland, California, together with Carol Swan, is called Moving On Center, where we teach this work.
Since you've mentioned it, would you care to mention the website and the phone number of the center?
Absolutely. Very simply, movingoncenter.org, and there you will see a link to movingonaerobics.org. And the phone number in Oakland is 510-634-0284. And we will have workshops throughout the summer, and I'll be teaching in mid-August, so that'll be great.
And are your workshops for people who want to train to become a somatic movement therapist, or just for the general public? Whom are they for?
We have workshops. All of our workshops are for anyone just interested in exploring the body through movement. As long as you're willing to do a little bit of moving, you're welcome to come. And even if that's scary to you, come along anyway, and we'll make it easy for you.
I can actually testify to this. I first encountered Bonnie's work because a friend of mine from Rome dragged me to a workshop at Omega, the Omega Institute in New York, and said, I've been tracking this woman all over Europe. I could never get into her workshop. We're going to do this. And I said, fine, until I got in and discovered that we were supposed to move, at which point I went into flee in horror. But actually, the idea of moving from your own internal organs, from your own tissues, from your own fluids, is very seductive, and it's not like somebody giving you orders of move here or move there. It has a totally different feeling, and it changed my life.
Wonderful. Yes, it really is about just guiding people to find out how their own bodies want to move. So, and to answer your question, those people that do want to go on to study to do this work can do so by doing repeated workshops and joining our certification program, which we offer through the same Moving On Center in Oakland, California. So the breast cancer work is part of our community outreach program. We are a nonprofit. And so as part of our service to the community, I've developed this exercise program, which truly is an aerobic dance exercise program, because aerobic exercise is the missing ingredient in breast cancer survivorship right now. There's plenty of yoga. There's lots of good work with stretching. But there really isn't this, how do we move out the fatigue and the depression that comes? And I think you understand it so well because you understand how the blood affects and the lymph affects healing. And you've mentioned in your book, Hands of Life, about what you learned from Bonnie Baybridge-Cohen about the power of the fluids. And so what I'm doing with this program is activating first the breath, then gentle blood flow to warm up the body, then introducing lymphatic breathing, which is a technique that Bonnie taught me years ago, but is very akin to what's done in almost every martial art form on the planet.
So what is lymphatic breathing?
Well, I think I can explain it over the radio. Basically, when we breathe, we tend to grow. We breathe in and our lungs expand and our rib cage expands. And then when we breathe out, we shrink a little bit. So that's what we call bloodful breathing. It's helping to circulate the blood. We expand on the inhale and we shrink on the exhale. With lymphatic breathing, we're actually trying to create a slightly tensile environment to make more room for the lymph vessels to have space, because they're just throughout the whole body. They're on the surface of the body. They're deep into the tissue. And if the tissue is at all sluggish, the lymph will pool or be smushed, if you will. And so by breathing in while you're in a small shape, you kind of are blowing up a very tight balloon. And then by exhaling and becoming large, expanding and moving out on the exhale, you're maintaining some of that tension. From a Laban language, we would call that establishing a peripheral boundary. So we're getting as big as we possibly can be with lots of space inside our bodies. So we breathe in and get small, and breathe out and expand. And this is what's done in Kiai in the martial arts. You make a loud sound as you step out. So you're breathing out. The loud sound is ensuring that you're breathing out as you make a big gesture. And you can see that that's a very good way to defend yourself. So it's increasing the lymphatic system. The whole immune system is invigorated. And for me, the most delightful moment in my Moving On aerobics class is when I'm with this circle of women that's been through surgery or radiation or chemo, and we do this moment where we just all say ha really loudly and everybody starts smiling. There's just this delight in empowering ourselves in that way.
So you've talked about, you know, bloodful breathing and lymphatic breathing, and I know there are two other key tissues that Bonnie works with and I've discovered to be enormously important. Is there breathing for cranial sacral fluid and breathing for synovial fluid as well that's specialized?
It's a little different than breathing, but we certainly talk about the rhythm of the cranial sacral fluid, and it's very linked to the rhythm of cranial sacral therapy. It's the idea of a very slow, and again, I use Laban language to describe what it is that we're doing. it's what we call even or monotonous phrasing. It becomes timeless. So rather than it being a correlation with external respiration, the breath through the nose, this is a separate rhythm that's going on contiguously with the breathing, with the air, with the environment. And this is this ongoing kind of pouring from the ventricles, of which are the spaces between the different parts of the brain, down around the spinal cord very smoothly. And so it's a rhythm of meditation. It's quiet, it's ongoing, it's timeless.
So rather than breathing to support that, you would more or less tune in to support that.
Exactly. We either rest in it or move along with it, which is what happens in Tai Chi, for instance. The slow version of Tai Chi. Some people know that Tai Chi can also be done as a martial art in a much quicker fashion, but the way most of us see Tai Chi being practiced in the park is that slow rhythm that is actually a very nice combination of the cerebral spinal fluid and the lymph working together.